overcast with 51 degrees in both Kenosha and Racine, 48 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, The Morning Show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, we're going to be looking back 100 years to one of the darkest and most tragic chapters in human history, the Turkish genocide of Armenians in the early part of the 20th century, which caused an untold amount of loss of life and hardship and suffering on a massive, bewildering scale. This important event is being remembered with a special event 1 week from tonight. And we have several participants and organizers of this event joining us today on the morning show. First, though, we're going to be listening to a little music by the greatest of Armenian composers, a revered figure, Gomidas. And that helps set the stage for the conversation, which will follow. music of Gomidas, and his music is going to be a very important featured factor, presence in this program, which is coming up 1 week from tonight at the Siena Center, a very special concert and program in memory of those who perished in the Armenian Genocide. We have us with us in the studios today several different people involved in the organization of this event coming up, and via telephone, one of the participants as well. I'm pleased to welcome, first of all, to the program, Yeprem Klijan, who is priest at St. Mesrob Apostolic Church, one of two Armenian parishes in Racine, St. Hagop being the other. Also with us today is Susan Proctor, who is chair of the Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeastern Wisconsin, a group which was formed especially this year to help organize an array of events around this in very important occasion. And she is one of the leaders at St. Mesrob as well, but primarily here representing the Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeast Wisconsin, which is actually representative of four different Armenian congregations or parishes here in southeastern Wisconsin. Also in the studios is Nick Berudian, who is a musician here in town who has organized a new ensemble called the Bell Ensemble, and they are providing much of the music, which is going to be part of this event a week from tonight. Nick happens to be of Armenian descent himself as well, right? So that's part of his, of course, very special interest in this event. And then joining us by telephone is Nina Frunjan, who is a Racine native, and she is a daughter of the St. Hagop Armenian Apostolic Church in Racine. And she is going to be a very special featured artist on this concert as well. And again, joins us via telephone to be part of this conversation. So first of all, to the three of you in the studios, a warm welcome to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
And Nina, are you still with us on the line?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us as well. I appreciate that. Appreciate that very well. Yeprem Klijan, maybe you could say a word about this event of 100 years ago, just in brief, about its significance in the lives of modern Armenians and why it is important to commemorate it in this way.
This is an event, you know, you'd think 100 years ago, that's ancient history. But for the Armenians, the scar is still present. You know, in April of 1915, the genocide started in perpetrated by the Ottoman Turks of the time. And it cannot be forgotten because every Armenian family has been affected by this genocide. We have all lost some relative in that genocide. Further, you know, when you think about the scope of it, 1.5 million, you know, numbers start to become insignificant after a while, but 1.5 million Armenians that were killed during the genocide, that represented over half of the population of Armenians in the world. Hmm. And one other significant point, there had been 6,000 Armenian priests. Priests were the first ones to be killed, because they were leaders of the community. Hmm. After the genocide, there were only 500 Armenian priests left in the world. Upon those scars, we're just getting over those scars now. And of course, losing family members, this has imprinted something on the soul of the Armenian people. Hmm. So it still reverberates today.
Right. And we'll talk in a moment about some of the specifics behind this terrible tragedy of a century ago. Susan Proctor, you are part of this Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeastern Wisconsin, formed especially for the task of trying to commemorate this and memorialize this. Tell us a little bit about the formation of this group and what it has been like for you to be part of it.
Our group was formed at the end of last year. First of all, we knew that this was a very important year in the history of the Armenian people. It's the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the genocide. and we all felt that this was so important that we should be doing things on a bigger scale rather than just each individual church doing their own small events. So the four Southeastern Wisconsin churches came together, St. Mesro, my parish, St. Hagope, also in Racine, Holy Resurrection of South Milwaukee, and St. John's of Greenfield. And we just sat down and said, what types of events do we want to share with not only our community, our Armenian community, but also non-Armenians who might not be aware of the history of the Armenian people? And we have had 8 events this year. The concert is our final event, and that's our 8th event. But we sponsored a film in conjunction with S.C. Johnson, Orphans of the Genocide, and brought in the producer for that film. We had a vigil at Monument Square, and we marched in the Memorial Day Parade. One of our people on the committee's father, Sarkis Bachaklian, actually designed and created 100 white crosses to commemorate one cross for every year of the genocide, and people actually held those crosses, and we marched in the Memorial Day Parade with those crosses. So that was very meaningful for us. We've had several other events, speakers about Armenian history. And again, the concert is our culminating event, and we're looking forward to that as not only historical, but also very positive moving forward for the Armenian people.
Right. Nina Frunzian, you're joining us by telephone. I wonder if you could just say a word about the significance of this event in your own life. And Nick, I'd be curious to hear from you as well about at what point in your own life, in your own childhood perhaps, did you first hear about this terrible event that was part of your people's history?
Growing up in the Armenian community, it's something I seriously don't even remember when I learned about it. It's something that I've almost always known about, this terrible injustice that has happened to our people and our ancestors. And I do have direct ancestors who were affected by this. On my mother's side, my grandparents, one of my grandmothers have no idea what happened to the rest of her family. She ran away with a family who would soon be her husband. It's a very direct influence on my childhood. We were always educated about this injustice and mostly encouraged to raise awareness because, it's not really written about in history books and not acknowledged by the U.S. government and still continued to be denied by the Ottoman Turks. So as much as it was the knowledge of it, it was also the urgency for us to make sure people are educated and aware of this, that this awful thing happened and directly influenced Adolf Hitler when he was perpetrating the Holocaust. So I think just that need for us to make sure that people know about this, just for human rights worldwide.
Nick, how about you? Do you have direct recollection of when this became something that you knew about?
I do. My father grew up at St. Mesro Church in Racine, but shortly after I was born, my parents decided to go to the Lutheran Church. So I wasn't quite as immersed in the history of the genocide by nature of not being in that community on a regular basis. But I remember asking why Grandpa was always angry. Actually, I remember years of kind of wondering that, and before my parents revealed a little bit of his history, of the history of our family. And I think I was in my teens when I was finally given knowledge that my great-grandfather had come here to the United States because of the genocide and really opened my eyes to the scope of that event and the trauma of it, which it was strange because I'd kind of felt the significance on a personal level before ever having even the nuts and bolts history of it. And I agree with Nina that education is really important. As a person my age, it's easy to not know about things like the Holocaust in Germany or the genocide of the Armenians. And it's also easy for generations closer to it to be more ready than we are, we young people, to move through it, to move past it, and maybe some of them are even eager to move past some of those painful experiences and memories. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really crucial that we revisit them and at least share the history in order to not experience that again.
For those of you just joining us, we're having a conversation today about the so-called Armenian genocide. In fact, my understanding is this is one of the first instances in which the term genocide was actually coined. We're talking about something which, in a sense, officially began 100 years ago, although some of the roots of it actually dated even earlier than that. But it was a massive extermination of Armenians, hundreds of thousands, perhaps more than a million. And it, of course, also caused an enormous diaspora around the globe. And the genocide is being commemorated. It has been already commemorated in a number of events sponsored and organized by the Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeastern Wisconsin. The last and sort of culminating event is a week from tonight at the Siena Center. With us in the studios today, Yeprem Kalidjian from the St. Mesrob, Susan Proctor, who is chair of this genocide committee, Nick Berudian, who is the conductor, artistic director of the Bell Ensemble, musicians of which are participating in this program, and via telephone, Nina Frunzen, who is a violinist originally from Racine, who's coming back home to participate in this program called From Victims to Victors. Yeprem Kalidjian, one of my understandings about part of what sort of prompted this event, the genocide, was something that involved kind of a reversal of fortune for the Ottoman Empire, which we don't tend to talk very much about. But evidently, their loss in the Balkan Wars and the loss of that territory and the displacement of many of those Muslims back into Turkey was part of at least what led to these terrible events that are now being commemorated. Can you tell us a little more about kind of the historical backdrop against which this terrible genocide occurred?
Well, Gregory, we had been on the highlands in that area, which you would call Eastern Turkey, for about 3,000 years. That was our land. That was our homeland. We were never going to leave. And as you mentioned, the Ottoman Empire falling apart, they really decided to come together to have more or less of a pan-Turkic union stretching across their empire. We were in the way. We were different. You know, I could go through the massacres that preceded this genocide, but let's get down to the difference. We were Christians. We were the first people to accept Christianity as a national religion. We were distinctly different. And just like Hitler could point at the Jews and say, you know what your problem is? It's those Jews. Oh, so the leaders of the Turkish government at that time could point at the Armenians and say, we must get rid of these infidels. And the genocide, the horrific events poured on from there. We were the different ones. We were the Christians. And it's a faith we couldn't leave. I mean, that's who we are. That's who we were. For millennia, we have put up with oppression and massacres, not just the Turks, but before that. And we were going to stand our ground. We, in fact, were the last man standing as a Christian people in that entire area. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So what exactly happened in 1915? What explain to our listeners the event in Constantinople that set off what we now think of as this event known as the genocide that went on for years.
Completely surprising to the Armenian people. In fact, we had Armenian members in the parliament, the Turkish government parliament. We had doctors and lawyers. It was then suddenly decrees were issued starting April 24th. That's why that date is so important to us, 1915. And messages were sent out to all the governors of the Ottoman Empire saying, exterminate, remove all Armenians from your area. Either exterminate them or start them marching toward the desert. And around 250, on April 24th, around 250 intellectuals, politicians, artists were gathered in Istanbul, Constantinople. And they were taken and they were slaughtered in the desert. And then everything else started to happen. Things that cannot be remembered without pain.
Right. Yeah. In what I've read about this event, one of the things that was very striking to me was the wide array of methods that were used to implement this. And that I found, I mean, beyond just the staggering numbers, was also the means by which this was implemented. I found in some ways almost as staggering. Your thoughts about that?
It hurts for me to read about that event in history. Because every time I read it, I get angry, like Nick's father. My father was an orphan of the genocide. He couldn't open up a newspaper and see a picture of orphans from anywhere without crying. It's the only time I would ever see my father cry. The horrific events, and this is why, you know, we need to keep on the front burner any genocide happening anywhere, because how could the Turks do this to us would be the primary question. How could they do inhumane things, pouring oil on people and burning them, tarring women, crucifying, literally crucifying priests? We could go on and on, and I don't want to. It's not right for your listeners to hear some of this. The question is, how could any people be driven to that level of inhumanity? And this is what we have to be diligent about in the world we live in today.
Right.
How is that possible? I think we have to keep seeking an answer to that.
At the time that this occurred, how known was it? I mean, for instance, how aware was the typical American?
New York Times, front page, everywhere. It was happening. Near East Relief being set up throughout the region. Churches, obviously non-Armenian churches, just pouring money over there. There was great concern. It was a genocide. All of the American consuls throughout the Ottoman Empire, by the way, we were not yet in the war. America was not yet in World War I. They were all reporting to our ambassador, Morgenthau, in Istanbul. He had direct knowledge of what was going on. He tried to intervene. If you go to, there is no denying the genocide on the on the American front, because all the consuls were giving reports, you know, exactly what was happening throughout the empire. It was well known by the State Department, by the newspapers. It was well known.
And of course, as is also the case with the Holocaust that came, you know, a couple of decades later, when one reads about this, there are also those instances of amazing heroism and courage. And I suppose if there is any comfort, it is in reading about some of the efforts that were made sometimes by Turks at great cost and by others who were concerned for one reason or another to try to do something to stem the tide.
Thank
of
you very
tragedy.
Much. Let me hasten to add then, just on that comment, sure. There can always be the parable of the good Turk. who would risk life and limb to save his Armenian neighbor. Absolutely. My family doesn't have any effect. That did not affect us, unfortunately. But we do have the Turks that put their neck on the line for us. And as we were marched out to the desert, how did those people survive? They were taken in by Muslim Arabs many times. And so we remember that also. Thanks for bringing that up.
So did there ultimately end up being any kind of coming to justice in the way that, for instance, in the wake of the horrors of the Holocaust, there were those Nuremberg trials and certain key perpetrators brought to justice? Did anything remotely resembling that occur with this genocide?
No. There's a short answer.
Yeah.
I mean, there were attempts, but no. There has been no justice served, and there is no recognition on the part of the Turkish government. Ask me later why that's important, by the way.
Right, yeah. What ultimately sort of led to the end of this? I mean, was it a sort of a terrible running out of...
They finished killing us. And those who could get away did get away, like I said, into the rest of the Middle East and then throughout the world.
What was left in the wake of this in terms of in Armenia itself?
In Armenia itself, of course, there was an independent Armenia, which later became part of the Soviet Socialist Republics. Obviously, many of the refugees ended up pouring into that country. People were dying on the streets there, and it left its mark on them also in the Republic of Armenia.
Over the intervening years, in your work, how have you tried to talk about this and address this, both on a personal level and on in the lives of those to whom you've ministered?
Yeah. I have the sorrowful privilege of being the priest. I've been around for a long time, talking to many of the victims of the genocide, the survivors of the genocide. And I have ministered to them in their painful memories, and that's been sad. And then dealing as a priest, how do I bring my people to not hate? It's so easy to hate. Hate is just so easy. Love is so difficult. Forgiveness, which is love, is so difficult. So, I'll be honest, it's an ongoing struggle for me to preach Christianity, which is forgiveness and love. Would go a long way if the Turkish government would simply recognize what they did.
So
we
all
can start that path more creatively.
So all these years later, that still has not occurred.
Look how long it took for the Americans to admit what we did to the Native Americans. That was important. And then we started teaching our children. We came to more wholeness. I think that the Turks, the 90 million Turks, they can come to great wholeness if they simply recognize what their ancestors did. It can be healing for them as a people.
Susan Proctor, I'm curious about this gathering of you and your some of your fellow Armenians from these four different parishes in this committee. I am guessing that these gatherings were kind of an interesting mix, because obviously you were engaged in a lot of planning and who's going to make the cookies and who's going to call so-and-so to make this happen. And yet I should think that when a committee forms around something like this, it feels quite a bit different than if you were a steering committee for something around, in a sense, more mundane matters. What were these meetings like, these gatherings, and how taken up were you in kind of the emotional backdrop of what this is all about?
I think that everybody on the committee understood the purpose of what we were trying to do. And actually, when we first got started, there was just an outpouring of all the different kinds of events we wanted to have. We could have had an event every month. We could have had one every couple of weeks, but we realized that we needed to just have a limited number of events to be able to highlight, first of all, the events of the genocide, our remembrance of the genocide, and then also to, again, with this concert, I feel like this is the perfect backdrop for we remember, but we are no longer victims. We are, we have survived. We're a vibrant people. We have, you know, beautiful music, beautiful culture, and I think that everybody understood that on the committee, and we all worked together very, very well. It was a wonderful collaboration.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking about the 100th anniversary of the Turkish genocide of the Armenians, and the culminating event in a number of different events organized by the Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeast Wisconsin is a special program which is 1 week from tonight. So next Tuesday, November 24th, 7 p.m. at the Siena Center, a special evening celebrating the music of Armenia and its neighbors, the official title of the program, From Victims to Victors. Nick Baruti, I know that you had some hand in the putting together of this program and are going to be, you are one of the singers participating. Tell us a little bit about the shaping of this program and in particular sort of the shaping of its sort of its flavor and some of the specific choices made in terms of the music to feature.
It's been an interesting process. I came into it at a point at which I had been planning in as yet a pretty theoretical way to produce a concert of Armenian music this fall, and I discovered upon attending St. Mesrob Church one Sunday morning that Susan was part of a committee that was also doing something very similar, and so we decided it was only sensical for us to collaborate. And the one thing that was in place was that you had recruited Nina, right, to play her violin, and I think she had even spoken with an accompanist by that point. And when I saw some of the pieces that Nina was planning on playing, I was delighted, but I was also it made me realize that my first assumption, which was that this is a memorial concert, was at least only partially true. And it has been really exciting to continue to work with Susan and through her with the committee behind the concert to really come to terms with this concert as both a commemoration, but also, as Susan was starting to say, it really is in some ways a celebration of Armenian culture, the fact that we're still here. You know, I'm reminded of that joke about Jewish holidays, that everyone can be summarized, they tried to kill us, they did not succeed, let's eat. I feel similarly, a similar thing could be said about Armenians. And so I began working with a singer recommended to me named Miriam Kocharian. She lives in Sussex, outside of Milwaukee, and has been living in the U.S. for a number of years. She grew up and studied voice in Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, at the conservatory, at one of the conservatories there. And so she'll be a part of our program, and she has also helped me to no end in understanding, helping me with repertoire selections. We decided that it was essential to have well-represented the music of Gomi Das. Gomi Das was one of the intellectuals and priests persecuted. He physically survived the genocide, but was brought to a state of mental breakdown by his experience through the genocide and what he was put through. Before that, while he was still well, and even before the persecutions began in outright earnest, he was a musicologist who went around Armenia collecting folk songs and organizing them and arranging them. And it is credited as the single person who elevated Armenian music to a place of standing on the European continent, which is really something to think about. So a number of his songs he collected and arranged for solo singer and piano. We'll be providing a number of those. There's also many of his songs are arranged for chamber chorus and small choir, and not least, Gomidas is responsible for one of the first complete musical transcriptions of the Divine Liturgy of the Armenian Church into a Western notation that was more easily transferable. So among his songs that we're doing is one called Anduni, which means, help me, Father Kligen, is it homeless?
That, homeless. Yeah.
Homeless. I've seen the translation immigrant.
Homeless.
It speaks of the experience, the heart experience of the Armenian people after having been displaced, as so many were. About being away from a home and not having a home anymore because you can't go back. There was nothing to go back to. A couple of the songs we're doing are a little bit more lighthearted, more representative of the folk traditions that he drew from. One is "The Sky is Cloudy" in English. Yarginkin Ambel-e.
Very good.
Okay. And another is walking, or walk, your footsteps. I love your footsteps. Kele, kele is the title.
So this is an experience that has drawn you back into your own roots in a way that probably you haven't experienced before in your life as a musician, I'm guessing.
It is, yeah. I remember at one point I was enlisted as a piano student in high school to accompany someone singing, I think, some Gomidas. It was Armenian songs over at the Prairie School, and I wish I could remember exactly what that was for. I don't even remember what the occasion was, but this is really my first foray into Armenian music, and some of the most gratifying and interesting work for me has been looking at the Divine Liturgy. Some of the pieces that will be most well known to the Armenians in the congregation, or it'll be an audience and not a congregation, but we'll be singing a couple of the songs that come right out of the liturgy, which really is a work of art. The current liturgy used by correct me if I'm erring on any of this, Father Kligen. The liturgy used by most Armenian churches, at least in the United States, is by a man by the name of Yegmalian.
Yes.
And so we'll be performing a couple of those pieces, hopefully in a way that is inspiring to even the people who hear this on a weekly basis in their church service,
right.
Because they don't necessarily have the opportunity to hear it performed and really worked like I hope to perform it. Mm-hmm.
Violinist Nina Frungen is with us on the telephone, and you are also one of the participants. In fact, you were on board very early on. First of all, tell us a little bit about the invitation that was extended to you to be part of this event a week from tonight.
Well, I've been involved in the Armenian community for a long time, and my father was also on the committee, and I remember him mentioning to me over the past year that you know, that they're trying to put together all kinds of events to commemorate the centennial of the Armenian Genocide, and how they're interested in my involvement. And I jumped at the chance of being able to program music that I thought would be fitting for this event. So that was really exciting for me.
I noticed, if I remember correctly, that the program is going to open with you playing the Romanian folk dances of Bela Bartok. Am I correct about that?
You are. No. I'm not sure if that's the opener of the program, but I know that is going to be
it's part of the program? Or
Yes, definitely.
So tell us, for instance, what inspires you to make a choice, for instance, like that. I mean, on the surface, it looks like something that's not going to be necessarily grave and deep and in a sense reflective of the occasion. But of course, this event is about more than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and agree with something Nick mentioned earlier, in that in this event that we are commemorating those killed and embracing the somberness of the situation, but we're also celebrating the survival and vibrance of our community. And just logistically speaking, there is not an abundance of repertoire by Armenian composers written for this instrumentation, for violin and piano. So in my process programming for this event, I, of course, went with Gomidas, and I agree with Nick that it's essential. Gomidas's music kind of captures qualities of what our people felt following these events. Like, he has these yearning melodies and longing for the homeland. Some of the lyrics of the songs I've chosen are things like, I would die for the coldness of my mountains, you know, the rivers stop flowing and their waters do not bring any news about my dear beloved, so all kinds of somber subjects. But I wanted to pair that with pieces, not necessarily by Armenian composers, that capture the vibrance and livelihood of our community.
A nice choice. So you're going to play, it looks like, some Gomidas to open, and then this Bartok, and then are you playing anything else as part of the concert?
I am. I'm playing a piece by Ernest Bloch, who's actually a Jewish composer. This piece actually pairs well with more of the emotional intensity of the event. The piece itself is actually an outpouring confession of his faith. But I thought that it was very relevant to what we're doing. We're kind of, it kind of mirrors the undying hope and faith of the Armenian people. So I thought that was a good fit. And also, I will be playing five melodies by Serge Prokofiev, who was a Soviet composer. And I think this piece kind of captures what it feels to be an outsider in a land far from home. Just the way that survivors of the Armenian Genocide surely felt.
Hmm. Very well put. I should think that it is an honor for you to be part of a program like this, and yet I should think emotions will run high as you play for an event like this. Have you ever been part of exactly something like this before?
No, not quite, actually. I've played here and there on community events, you know, banquets and celebrations, but not something so so heavy.
It promises to be an important night. And Susan Proctor, I assume that those of you who have helped organize this are anxious that that you are welcoming into that audience not only people of Armenian descent, but others from the community may be anxious to learn more about this.
Absolutely. We've had excellent attendance at our events by the Armenian community, and also non-Armenians as well. And there are 400 seats in the sanctuary at the Siena Center, and we would love to have every single one of them filled up for this event.
Yeprim Kalijan, Are you planning to say anything that night? Is there much in the way of words that will be spoken, or is music going to carry the message for the most part?
It's the music and the people present taking in the music and being moved by the music. Absolutely.
Very good. Nick, remind us once again of exactly when and where this performance is going to be taking place.
From Victims to Victors takes place next Tuesday, November 24th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary of the Siena Center on North Erie Street, the 5600 block of North Erie Street. And performing will be singers with the Bell Ensemble, violin Nina Frungen, and piano accompaniment from Johanna Schilling, and also including soloists, sopranos Emily Davis and Miriam Kocharian. It is free and open to the public. All are welcome and encouraged to attend. Next Tuesday, 7 o'clock at Siena Center.
The beautiful Siena Center, one of the loveliest spaces in all of Southeast Wisconsin,
absolutely.
Actually. And I'm sure you're grateful that they have opened their doors for this particular event. It's a great choice. Well, I'm so glad that we could have this important conversation. And for all of us for whom this is not a part of our direct history, it's so important for us to know something about this important story. So I appreciate the presence of all four of you being part of this conversation today. Nina Frungen, a violinist originally from Racine and part of the community at St. Hagup, featured soloist on this event. Nina, thank you for joining us today, and very best wishes to you.
Thank you for having me.
Very good. And then joining us here in the studios are my thanks to Susan Proctor, chair of the Armenian Genocide Committee of Southeast Wisconsin, Nick Berudian, artistic director of the Bell Ensemble, and of course, Yeptum Klijan, priest at St. Mesrob Apostolic Church. It was a real honor to have all of you here on the morning show today.
Thank you for having us, Greg.
And again, we want to remind everyone of the importance of this program coming up on next Tuesday evening, November 24th, 7 p.m., at the Siena Center. Here is some of that Ernest Bloch piece that will be part of the program. Music of Ernest Bloch, which will be part of next Tuesday evening's commemorative program at the Siena Center, free and open to the public. Tomorrow on the morning show, Alvaro Garcia, who is the director of the orchestra at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, talking about their upcoming concert, which will feature the music of John Williams from the Star Wars films. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Cloudy and breezy with light rain, patchy fog, a high of 57 degrees. Cloudy and breezy tonight with more rain and fog, a low of 55 degrees. Cloudy and windy tomorrow, still more rain likely, tomorrow's high 59 degrees. Sharply colder on Thursday, sunny but a high of only 45. Friday's high just 40. Saturday's high 36 degrees with light snow. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha.